Ashtaja, Palasha, Vilasa, Bhaktya, Karamashayam, Gratitam, Udgratayanti, Santa, Tatvan, Na, Vitta, Matayo, Yatayo, Api, Dutta, Shroto, Danas, Tam, Aranam, Vaja, Asudevam, Yatpada Pankaja Palasha Vilasha Bhaktya Karamashayam Gratiti Gratitam Udgratayanti Shanta Tadvanna Ritta Matayo Yatayo Pinutha Shroto Ganasta Aranam Bhajavasudevam Yatpada Pankaja Palasha Vilasha Bhaktya Paramashayam Gratiti Gratitam Ugratayam Tishanta Tadvanna Ritta Matayo Yatayo Pirutha Shroto Ganasta Aranam Bhajavasudevam Ashayam, desire. Gratitam, heart not. Ugratayanti, root out. Santa, devotees. Tat, that. Vak, life. Na, never. Riktamataya, persons devoid of devotional service. Yataya, ever increasingly trying. Api, even though. Rutha, stop. Shrotagana, the waves of sense enjoyment. Tam, unto him. Aranam, worthy to take shelter. Haja, engaged in devotional service. Vasudevam, unto Krishna, the son of Vasudeva. Translation. The devotees who are always engaged in the service of the toes of the lotus feet of the Lord can very easily overcome hard-knotted desires for fruitive activities. Because this is very difficult, the non-devotees, the jnanis and yogis, although trying to stop the waves of sense gratification, cannot do so. Therefore, you are advised to engage in the devotional service of Krishna, the son of Vasudeva. Purport. There are three kinds of transcendentalists trying to overcome the influence of the modes of material nature. The jnanis, yogis, and bhaktas. All of them attempt to overcome the influence of the senses, which is compared to the incessant waves of a river. The waves of a river flow incessantly, and it is very difficult to stop them. Similarly, the waves of desire for material enjoyment are so strong that they cannot be stopped by any process other than bhakti yoga. The bhaktas, by the transcendental devotional service under the lotus feet of the Lord, become so overwhelmed with transcendental bliss that automatically their desires for material enjoyment stop. The jnanis and yogis who are not attached to the lotus feet of the Lord simply struggle against the wave of desire. They describe in this verse as ritta mataya, which means devoid of devotional service. In other words, the jnanis and yogis, although trying to be free from the desires of material activities, actually become more and more entangled in false philosophical speculation or strenuous attempts to stop the activities of the senses. As stated previously, Vasudeva, Vasudeve, Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga, Prayojita, Jalayantyashu, Vairagyam, Janam, Cha, Yad, Ahaitukam, Bhagavatam 1.2.7. Here also the same point is stressed. Bhaja Vasudevam indicates that one who is engaged in the loving service of Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, can very easily stop the waves of desires. As long as one continues to try to artificially stop the waves of desires, he will certainly be defeated. That is indicated in this verse. Desires for fruitive activities are strongly rooted, but the trees of desire can be uprooted completely by devotional service, because devotional service employs superior desire. One can give up inferior desires when engaged in superior desires. To try to stop desires is impossible. One has to desire the supreme in order to not be entangled in inferior desires. Jnanis maintain a desire to become one with the supreme, but such desire is also considered to be kama, lust. Similarly, the yogis desire mystic power, and that is also kama. And the bhaktas, not being desirous of any sort of material enjoyment, become purified. There is no artificial attempt to stop desire. Desire becomes a source of spiritual enjoyment under the protection of the toes of the lotus feet of the Lord. It is stated herein by the Kumaras that the lotus feet of Lord Krishna are the ultimate reservoir of all pleasure. One should therefore take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord instead of trying unsuccessfully to stop desires from material enjoyment. As long as one is unable to stop the desire for material enjoyment, there is no possibility of becoming liberated from the entanglement of material existence. It may be argued that the waves of a river are incessantly flowing, and that they cannot be stopped, but the waves of the river flow towards the sea. When the tide comes over the river, it overwhelms the flowing of the river, and the river itself becomes overflooded, and the waves from the sea become more prominent than the waves from the river. Similarly, a devotee with intelligence plans so many things for the service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness that stagnant material desires become overflooded by the desire to serve the Lord. As confirmed by Yamunacharya, since he was being engaged in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, there is always a current of newer and newer desires flowing to serve the Lord, so much so that the stagnant desire of sex life becomes very insignificant. Yamunacharya even says that he spits on such desires. Bhagavad Gita 2.59 also confirms Param drishva nivartate. The conclusion is that by developing a loving desire for the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, we subdue all material desires for sense gratification. So the living entity's natural position is to be serving the Lord. So that means his desires or his consciousness will be focused on the Supreme. Difficulty comes is that the living entity has taken note that the Lord is enjoying his energy. And pleasure can come from there. And so the living entity takes up the same cause that he will enjoy energy. Because of this, then his natural love then turns into lust. So lust means the desire to enjoy the Lord's energy. Right? It's a generic term, as we see the jnanis. It means we of course apply lust within the material framework. But then also the jnanis, the desire for liberation, the yogis, a desire for mystic potency, then this is all lust. All it is perverted desire to serve the Lord. So that's why it's being made. It's such a simple point. We'll say, no, but there's something more here. You know, getting over the desires is so great, then we can get to desiring to serve Krishna. But that's not actually the fact. It's not that when we stop cooking for, for our own senses, then only we can cook for Krishna. No, you just cook for Krishna. It's automatically done. If you're cooking for Krishna, there is no cooking for yourself. So when the desires are connected to Krishna, there are desires for oneself, right? For one's own trying to enjoy the energy. It's very simple. The difficulty comes up is that we have the conditioning is so strong that we really sincerely think there's some benefit in separately trying to enjoy the Lord's energy. Right? That's our habit. That's our idea. It's our idea. It's not a reality. People say, yes, people are enjoying. That's it. Nobody's enjoying. Right? Like that. You flip through the magazine, they have this fancy resort in some exotic place like that, and everybody's smiling and all that. Remember, they paid them $1,000 to smile. If I came up to you and said, here's $1,000, you'd smile. All they have to have is a guy there with a camera. Right? Now, if I put that in the magazine, then everyone around the world reads it, wow, they're really enjoying. Yeah. No, they're enjoying the prospect of what they're going to do with $1,000. They're not enjoying the place. So, this is the idea, is that it's not, we make up this concept, because the point is, it's Krishna's energy. So naturally, his interaction with it will be enjoyable. Right? Because he's not trying to enjoy the energy, he's trying to interact with it, right, based on its nature. Right? But we want to interact with it for what we'll get out of it. So it's a perversion, it's reversed. That's the difference. So it's impossible, it can't function. It means as a science, it can't work. We only call it enjoyment, right? Because we say, if I get this, I'll be happy. Right? I'm simply saying that. So when I get it, then of course I have to manifest happiness. Otherwise my whole material concept was out the window. Right? But the point is there's a moment and then it's gone. Because getting something happens in a moment. So that means your enjoyment of gaining it can only be for a moment. And then we're remembering how happy we were getting it. Right? There's no further enjoyment of it. You understand? So it's all made up. It's not real. So all that's being mentioned is that we have desire. You're not going to get rid of desire. Right? This is also an illusory concept. Just like we say we're going to enjoy the material nature, another illusory concept is I'm going to get rid of desire. It's not going to happen. Desire is the symptom of life. Right? You know something's alive because it has a desire. Right? So the point is you can't separate desire. What you can change is what you are desiring. Do you desire in connection with the Lord, or do you desire separate from the Lord? That's the actual choice. We'll say, oh, that's so simple. Well, it is that simple. Right? You know, it's just like you can follow the, you know, rules of driving on the road, or you can not follow them. Right? Does that make sense? You know, you say, well, I can half follow, half not. Yeah, that's called mixed devotional service. Right? So it's just you have these, you follow, you engage your desires in the Lord's service, or you don't. It's that simple. Difficulty comes is we like to make it complicated because we think there is such a thing as stopping desire, and we think that there's actually a way to materially fulfill desire. Therefore, it becomes difficult. So, therefore, when we don't enjoy in one way, then we think up a new way. Oh, if I had just said this, or I'd just done that, or if it had just been a little earlier. Right? You know, the guy kicks himself for the rest of his life for that opportunity that was missed. That at the time he didn't even know he missed it. Only later on he figured out he missed it. You know, if only I'd done this, then, you know, like, but no. The point is that simply desire means, okay, the point on it can't be stopped. So it's a matter of that the natural love for Krishna is being applied to the Lord's energy. Right? And the idea is that it stops at the energy. We're not applying our desire towards the energy that it stops at Krishna. So now then we'll think, oh, but then it's so difficult. We have to change it from desire for material to desire for Krishna. No, it's the same thing. The consciousness is focused on the Lord's energy. That's what we're doing. To enjoy, you have to focus on the Lord's energy. The difference is we think, I'm the one going to get the enjoyment from this. No, it's just from the same desire, for the same endeavor. No, Krishna will get the enjoyment from it. So we don't even have to change what we're doing. This is the best part about it. Right? Because the Mayavadis and the yogis will make it sound, you have to do something different. Right? You have to stop doing everything, or you have to tie yourself up like a pretzel, and stand on your head at the same time, then it will be spiritual. But it's not like that. We're already engaging our senses in the Lord's energy. Right? You don't have anything else to engage it in. Right? It means there's God and there's His energy. We're energy, we can perceive energy. So we perceive God through the energy. Right? But the difficulty, we can't perceive God through His energy because we're thinking we're God. Right? Because if God's already taken, then you're not going to look anywhere else. Right? So we simply, we see the Lord's energy, and then it's a matter of who's going to enjoy this, me or Krishna. That's all. You're simply converting the consciousness. So therefore, what you're, the desire doesn't change. It's called material because it reflects back on us. It's called devotional because it continues to Krishna. Right? Reflect, because when it goes to Krishna, it's real. When it reflects back, it actually is the reflection. It's the material energy. Very simple. You know, that's the problem. So it's so simple, right? Because we've been trained, you know, for so many lifetimes. And no, spiritual life means it's very complicated, very difficult. You know, like the Prabhupada asked the big Sanskrit scholar, you know, renowned scholar, you know, who is God? And then his comment, oh, very complicated, very difficult, and like this. And then after that, okay, turns to the 8-year-old kid, who's God? He says, Krishna. See, what's the problem? So we like to make it complicated. I remember once I was talking to I think he was an MA in math. And so he was coming, visiting my work. I think he was, you know, interested in Vedic education and knowledge, you know, just like that. But he was just an academic. And so then, because he was a mathematician, he asked what we did in math, and we started talking about the Vedic mathematical system. And so he was intrigued at first. Then when I pointed out that it's such a nice system, that everything in the whole system, even the most complicated things, are reduced down to addition. Right? You know, what you did the first day you went to school, right? They say, you know, 1 + 1, right? So everything's addition. Subtraction is you're adding backwards. You know, in other words, we generally take this minus this. No, this plus what equals that. You know what I'm saying? If I have 5 and 3, then I have 2. So 3 + what equals 5? It's addition. Right? It's reverse. And then multiplication means you simply add in groups. And division simply means you subtract in groups. You know, algebra just means you put those together in various combinations and do them all together to get one answer. You know, so when he understood it was so simple, he immediately lost interest. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, any kid can understand it's not complicated, doesn't, you know, have to crack their head. It's such a nice system. You know, you can do it in your head. But he was attached to, it's very complicated. I have to sit there and write it down, you know, and go through all the different things. And, you know, in those days, I think, weren't so much things. You'd use a slide rule and all these kinds of things. So it really gets complicated. And then, wow, you know. And so he just lost all interest. So that's the thing, is we like to make it very complicated. Because then we feel it's very sophisticated. Right? You know, I'm an adult, right? You know, it's like, I'm not doing what the kids are doing. Like that, you know? So that's the fun part, right? So it's like, you have an adult, you know, adult student comes to the Gurukul, right? Kids are sweeping. So, okay, well, the kid can sweep, and he's pretty good at it, you know? But, so if a kid can do it, I'm an adult. That means I shouldn't be doing this. I should be doing something more complicated, right? You know? Studying or this or that, or, you know, some difficult thing, you know, because if the kids can do it, then it's not, it can't be important. All right, funny thing is in his own apartment, who's going to sweep? Right, he's going to have to do it, you know. Did he understand? So we just found with time you can't have adults study with kids, because the adult has such a different concept that education has to be very complicated. Well, the kids don't have that problem. You understand? So this is what we do to spiritual life. We try to make it complicated because it's the highest, it's the best, so it must be the most complicated. But it's not. It's actually the simplest, because it's actually what the soul's supposed to do. Does that make sense? That's you know. So the devotee, simply by engaging in bhakti yoga, then the desire means it's already, he has an occupation, he has a nature. He's already engaged, he has to eat, so therefore his attention, his desires are going towards material energy. But it goes towards that, I want to make this nice for Krishna to be happy. Right? Instead of the family is for me to be happy, no, it's to be Krishna to be happy. Nothing changes, the situation doesn't change. So for the devotees it's very easy. They just connect it to Krishna and they're the topmost yogis. Well, everybody else is going to be foaming at the mouth because they're going to, you know, have to get rid of everything, sitting there with nothing, and then they're going to try to get to the neutral platform, which is not going to happen. You know, they can get a few moments like that, and then it's back to normal. So here the Kumaras then are bringing out this point that if we surrender to the Lord, then, and our purpose is to please Him, then by His grace, we will be able to do this. Right? Because as long as we think we're the Lord, then our interaction with the Lord's energy has to be for ourselves. But if we surrender to the Lord, then we can accept, no, it's for Him. Right? So that surrender is that. The recommendation. Any questions? Yes. Again. Here, just right here. Probably on the bottom, that little. I think you can.
All right. Maybe this is just restating what you said, but I've always thought we try to make things complicated because we have to do that to avoid what's obvious.
Yeah, I mean, that's also, I mean, it's a more poetic way of saying it, like that.
It's very simple, but, well that's what Shankara said to his disciples at the end.
Yeah, just Bhaja Govinda, that's it.
Nahi Nahi Rakshati,
nothing else. But the thing is the muda likes to make it complicated. Is it on the point? Okay. Otherwise, you might have a riot. I think it's been turned off. Oh, sorry.
Sometimes the eyes are also facing the wall. Thank you so much for the explanation. In this part of the purport, when Prabhupada says that actually the jnanis and the yogis, they, this is a becoming one with the Lord, is another expression of karma or love. Could you kindly elaborate in these finer points? Because in this state, the yogis and the jnanis, they have already controlled the sense, that have developed detachment material elements in general, and it is said also that it takes two for the tango.
Okay. So it's okay. Appropriate example. Okay. So here, defining the desire for merging into the Brahman as lust. So that there's, you always have the generic principle and you have the specific. So the generic means it always applies. The specific will be for the particular situation one's in and the particular engagement. So in this, you always have two levels when you're dealing with material covering. It means the first level is the desire to control and enjoy. That's generic. That's just material consciousness means you will have that. The secondary will mean what you want to control and what you want to enjoy. Right? So that's then where it gets, you know, more specific. Like if you say food, you know, then everybody can relate to it. But then you say, you know, how you say snails, you know, you know, like that, with the, you know, nice sauce and all that. Then it's kind of like most people go, yuck, you know, and then the French go, mmm. You know, so like that. So it changes. Also, these birds out here with the big beak, they also go, mmm, you know, like that. So then, that's a specific. So generally where we get mixed, where the confusion comes is between the specifics, or not being able to tell, because of our own conditioning, we have that, we see things through a specific view. And so when we're dealing with the generic, we don't necessarily understand that's what's being implied. Right? Because the definition of lust, as given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is where, means, okay, just back up one, is that love for Krishna. You know, in other words, the ananda of the living entity, that element, where we have a goal in activity, is to be happy, ananda. So when that is not applied to God, you know, and it's applied without God, then it generically is called lust. Right? Then when we get into specifics, then we'll say that when that perverted love for God is applied towards the interaction between male and female, that's called lust. When it's interaction between you and your money, it's called greed. You know, it's between you and an enemy, it's hate or revenge or like this. So it takes on all these qualities. You know, when you want to be satisfied with the peace, it'll be, so it takes on all these different names. But, so therefore you have the generic and the specific. But at the same time, as if we notice that the generic is also has the same definition as the male-female, because we're taking the masculine role, and the Lord's energy, whatever it is the feminine. So we're trying to enjoy God's energy. So therefore we can generically call all of it lust. But if we want to be specific, then we'll say, okay, what kind of lust that is. So, in other words, the Brahmananda is the kind of lust, right? But it'll be called Brahmananda. So we're used to it being called like that, you know, the yogi, his mystic powers, or, you know, his meditation. But it's still the same generic. He's still trying to enjoy the Lord's energy as Purusha, because the desire to control and enjoy hasn't been given up. Only the devotee gives it up. So that's the meaning. When he surrenders, then he's given that up, or at least is attempting to. So that's why then it's not counted as lust anymore. Right? It may have something left over from conditioning, but then that's just the you know, the latent mix that's there that with time will go away. But it's not the focus like that. But for the yogis and the jnanis, that they're totally focused on this, and the more they're focused, the better the result of their endeavor. But the result of their endeavor will simply become, you know, their pure, unalloyed lust. You know? And so it won't be satisfying, because they can't enjoy the Lord's energy. So therefore, again, they'll fall back. Is that okay?
That's how it is said, that they have to go back to their previous experience.
Yes, they'll have to go back to the previous. Because the point is that you come to a neutral state. So you're situated in Vermont. So they'll think of, when we think of Vermont, then it's a feature of Krishna. It's the effulgence of his qualities, but it's actually manifest by his internal potency. You know, it's just like the prayers, when they're talking about Krishna, it'll talk about him and his threefold bending form, playing his flute and his eyes, but it'll also mention his effulgence, because it's very attractive, it's very beautiful. But it's only attractive connected to the person. Right? So that's why we don't have a problem that Brahman's attractive, but it's only attractive. Its point of attractiveness is to add to the attractiveness of Krishna in his interaction with the devotees. The monists want to just enjoy the Brahman itself, but because it's a manifestation of the internal potency, they're still trying to enjoy the internal potency. That's the difficulty. They're still trying to enjoy the feminine.
In one purpose, Prabhupada explains this Vasudeva that is being quoted in the verses to be worshipped as the Krishna, state of Krishna consciousness when the Lord is alone without the company of the internal energy.
It means you have all the levels that means Vasudeva can mean on the platform of interaction with the Lord, you know, as Bhagavan. It can mean on the act interaction with Paramatma, or it can mean interaction with Brahman. So all living entities in the primary creation are on Vasudeva Sattva. So they're interacting with Krishna as Brahman. Then as soon as that's manifest, they're interacting with Krishna as Paramatma. The difficulty is in both those levels there's still polluted consciousness. But once through here, that polluted consciousness is corrected by focus, engaging the desires in the Lord's service, then we find then that Vasudeva comes to the actual eternal platform of Vasudeva Sattva. Because it's also mentioned that the devotees are in that state of pure goodness. So they're also on the platform of Vasudeva Sattva. So it's just a matter of understanding what are the levels that are being discussed. Like that. So this, because you're still only dealing with one thing, that's Krishna. But which aspect of the unlimited aspects one is dealing with? And who is the, how you say, the ashray of interacting with Krishna, whatever it is. So because he has that mood of only thinking of God as the impersonal Brahman, therefore that's all Krishna interacts with him as. So the discussion is therefore in that point. But the devotee dealing with Bhagavan actually deals with the whole thing, though he doesn't have to intellectually appreciate that. You know, that's why it's so much greater. Right? Dealing with the material energy, it's a spark of its splendor. You don't get much from it. Dealing with the Brahman, you get more from that. But still, it's the impersonal qualities. Means the qualities are there, but they're not manifest specifically. If I say peace, it's a nice quality. Right? So it's not nirgun like in Mayavadi say, it's sattva with qualities. But it's not specifically manifest. Then if I take, you know, a nice bubbling brook or a nice forest or, you know, something like that, or, you know, the city in the early morning when nothing's going on, then there's peace, right? There's a manifestation. So the idea is that the qualities are generic, so anything can manifest. He's unlimited. Anything can manifest through the internal potency. But they're not interested in manifestation. So therefore, it's just the Brahman. But when it's manifest, then you're dealing with the complete personality. So therefore, the taste is so much greater. Therefore, the unlimited compared to the, you know, drop of happiness of Brahman. And so it's always, these are always given so that we understand is that it's so much more. And since we do everything to be happy, so why we wouldn't do something that will give us, you know, unlimited eternal happiness? But, you know, but it's just a matter of getting accustomed to the idea that it can always work. You know, otherwise it's great, you know, but it can be like that. You're in the kirtan, it's so great, I'm spectacular, it's the best in your life, but it can be like that always. But we'll think, okay, now that'll be over, and now we'll go back to the regular grind, and then we'll be the next kirtan, and like that.
So the fault of the jnanis and the yogis is to be the center of the pleasure.
Yes, to be the center of the pleasure. Because the point is to appreciate the Lord on the transcendental platform. It's not a problem. Right? The shantaras and all that is there. So it's like, you know, when they gives one's heart, one's appreciating the Lord, appreciating that position. But the thing is then is the dynamic active. Because they only want to appreciate, but not the person. Right? So it's a shanta ras without the ras. You know, like that. So it's just, they don't understand what they're appreciating. So they don't get a good result. It's a temporary result. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, if it's such a simple thing that we just have to engage the Lord's energies in the service of the Lord. My question is why do you see in Gaudiya Vaishnava history so many people who are really renunciants, like Raghunath Das Goswami and Lord has shown us, Babaji, really trying to give up the material world.
They're not trying to give up. That's the point, is they're not trying to give up the material world. They're so absorbed in Krishna consciousness that there's nothing here of interest. And they don't have the duties. They're not married. If they were married, they'd do their duties nicely. You know, like Acharya is married. He does his duties nicely. You know, Srivast Thakur is married. They do their duties nicely. But when you hear about Srivast Thakur, you hear about the kirtans interacting with Lord Chaitanya, because that's where the focus is. He does take out his garbage. Srivast Thakur does take the garbage out and throw it out. See, like that. They do sweep their floors. They do wipe them. You know, when the kid is there, they change diapers. But that's not where the focus is. Like that. So the point is what's being made here is that the taste in Krishna consciousness is so much greater that we focus there. We don't have to separately engage to renounce. The Goswamis aren't sitting there, you know, and they're not, they're only sleeping, you know, it mentions, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami mentions they might sleep an hour and a half, 2 hours, an hour and a half a day, and sometimes even that they forget. So they're not sitting there and, you know, chanting their japa, and then, you know, he's telling, the one Goswami's telling the other, if I nod out, wake me up, you know, or, you know, wake me up in 7 minutes, you know. I remember, you know, new bhaktas, you know, going to take a 7-minute nap, you know, like that, you know, and then you're going to get back to your chair. They don't have to do that. They're so absorbed that they don't think about sleeping. If a situation presents itself, then they might rest. But they'll still think of Krishna. But if not, they're so engaged in talking and other things or writing that they don't even remember to sleep. So it's a matter of that they're the example of this working, is that they're so absorbed that there's no attachment. And that even we see, like we were saying, those who are in the Grihastha Ashram, their focus is all on Krishna. They do all their duties, but all the discussions and the focal point is on the Krishna conscious elements, like that. So it's both are examples that for the Vaishnavas, this system works. They are actually renounced. While the Jnanis and Yogis who appear to be renounced aren't actually, because they still want to enjoy material nature. Therefore, Krishna says, one should know, you know, what's action and inaction, and inaction and action.
Kali Maharaj, could you then elaborate, please? Sometimes, if it is necessary or expected that the sannyasi, the Grihastha continue being exemplar and accept the order of sannyasa, or it's not compulsory?
The order of sannyas, is it compulsory for the Grihastha? The basic principle is that sannyas is what one's trying to do in the Vedic culture, is get to the platform that Krishna talks about in the 18th chapter, the Gita, of sannyas, meaning that whatever you're doing is to please the Lord, not yourself. Right? So the first step is renunciation, where you have something that's yours and you give it up. But at some point it comes to, it's not yours. So if one, so the whole Vedic culture is trying to create where the living entity comes to that platform of sannyas by mentality, right? But because of conditioning, we generally take as the action itself is what is the work, right? The devotion is the endeavor, not the devotion is the move. So to accommodate that, then you have the order of sannyas. Because then it's like, oh, now one is renounced, right? In the Grihastha, he can enjoy his senses, or he's the gross sense enjoying, or, you know, whatever, whichever perspective you want to look. But it's the point is the Vedic concept is all should be there. Now, does that make sense? So everyone has to get to that position. So then it's either by being a Grihastha, one won't do that, then one should take sannyas, right? So that's one consideration. Another consideration is, if one is already sannyas as a Grihastha, then there's no technical need to take sannyas if it's favorable to act in that position of sannyas as a Grihastha. But as soon as it's not favorable to act as a sannyas, with the sannyasa mentality in grihastha ashram, then one takes sannyas in the form. So the normal thing is it just goes from there's all the endeavor to create the facility for household life, but if one can do that as in that sannyasa mentality, then at some point, in any case, whether you're attached to it or not, it all kind of fizzles out. Kids grow up, you know, so you need the whole house, you need the money, you need the facilities, you need all the insurance, like that, because the kids are there. When they grow up, it's not actually required anymore. You know, for you and your wife, you don't need all that. You know, you've been there, done that, and all the social things and this and that, so, you know, 500 saris aren't so important anymore. You know, all these different things. So one naturally just reduces it down. Right? You're not expanding it anymore. You're just working with just what is comfortable to be engaged nicely and continuously in Krishna consciousness. That's called vanaprastha. Right? And if that's favorable, then that's fine. Right? So it's recommended that as a brahmachari vanaprastha sannyas, one leaves the body, not as a grihastha. Right? Does that make sense? You know, as a position, because then it's more the mentality is focused on renunciation. That's the idea. Right? So one just comes to that position, so vanaprastha is fine, when it already is sannyasa. Right? But technically, the grihastha also can already be a sannyasa. It's just whether it's favorable or not. So therefore, on the external, if the externals are favorable, then you choose whatever is the position. The grihastha is favorable, that's chosen. It's not favorable, then the renounce is favorable. If it's favorable, one can remain in that position. Like that. The idea is one should not be like Ajamil, that at 88 one is, you know, just having his youngest son and, you know, everything's going great. You know, that should be avoided. You know? Of course, you know, some people would say, he's in pretty good health, right? You know, he's doing okay. But that's not the point. If he's in such good health, he should be using it for something else. You know?
So, if the devotional service means dedication above any kind of renunciation or exploitation. In the sannyasa ashram, one has to be very fixed when dealing with all the opulences that are supposed to be renounced.
It's for anybody. The opulence, whether you're brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, opulence is still the same problem. The thing is, grihastha has license for it. But the point is that he thinks, I have this license, this mind to enjoy. That's totally detrimental. You know, it won't be progressive spiritually. But it's within his duty, he can work within that. But he has the license, I can work with sense gratification. You know, what would be called the field of sense gratification. But I'm supposed to do it in a mood of sannyas, and I'm connected with this for Krishna. But if he does it, that, no, it's mine, I can do it like this, it'll be a problem. It's always a problem. To try to enjoy Krishna's energy is always a problem. It doesn't matter who you are. It's not because you have a license, it's not a problem. You know what I'm saying? If I have a license for dealing with some very dangerous corrosive acids, it's not that, it's still not dangerous. If I one mistake, you know, and you know, you're missing some appendage. Like that, you know. So the point is it's still just as dangerous. It's just that because the inclination is there, you deal with that. But it's being dealt with in a wide range. So it's not money that's the problem. I mean, of course, ultimately it's money, you know, or position. That's generic. But it's more the application. If I give you, it's just like you have the man. There's a counter. One person is sitting on one side of the counter, one person's on the other side of the counter. And so the one person is asking for $10,000. And the other person on the other side of the counter checks the computer, you have it in your account, they give you $10,000. Both are dealing with $10,000. Right? So it's not that, oh, the person with the passbook, he can touch the $10,000, but the teller can't touch the $10,000 because it's not theirs. So the point is it's fine as long as they understand it's not theirs. As soon as the teller thinks this is my $10,000, you know, and clicks into the thing that this person already took it and puts it in their pocket, then there's a problem. So the point is dealing with opulence for Krishna, that's not actually dealing with that. That's just you're dealing with the Lord's energy in His service. We simply, because of our attachment to opulence, position, fame, and all that, that's why we get bent out of shape. Because no, this is my right to deal with this, and I'm enjoying. If I have it, I'd enjoy it. So if he has it, he must be enjoying it. Like that. Because we'll say, wow, I tell him he's got so much money, you know, like that. Check out all the money that guy's got. No, he doesn't have any. You know, if it's for Krishna, you don't have it. So that's the mentality that the grihastha themselves should be cultivating. Right? It's my service to work with this family and money and facility, but it's not mine. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I'm like the dog standing outside the house and guarding it to see that everything goes nicely because it's Krishna's house. Not that the dog is my house. Right? So that's the point. That's why, you know, people get along so nicely with the dogs is they never think it's mine. But they'll be very protective of it and do a lot of service. Right? The cat, it's theirs. You're the servant. Right? But the dog, they're the servant. And you're the master. So that's the whole point, is that opulence is there or not, it doesn't matter what position. If the living entity thinks it's mine, then it's a problem. It doesn't matter what varna, what ashram. It doesn't matter.
So it seems that not having a fully developed spiritual body, kama and prema are going side by side.
Yeah. No, kama and prema, that's the point. Prema means that's the devotional side cultivating. Kama means that's what's left over from the conditioning. But they're in the same position. They're the same entity. It's just where it's being applied. So when we say it's mixed, it means that ananda of the soul is being partly given to Krishna and partly for ourselves. And when it's pure, it means it's for Krishna. When it's material, it means it's for ourselves. But it's the same ananda, the same quality of the soul. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jayadai Gaura Prem.